to the tiny hallway. It seems even smaller because it's lined with boxes from UPS delivery or courier. I notice a bag from Bloomingdale's among the boxes, and then a name on the bag written in black Sharpie. For my Layla, 5E. The hair on my neck stands on end, and I stop in my tracks. A wave of jealousy rolls through me. I push a hand through my hair, count to 10, walk to the end of the mailboxes, remind myself that this bag from Bloomingdale's doesn't change things, that it doesn't mean anything, that Harley was with me this morning, and she told me how she felt, and I told her too. She carries my heart, and I can do the same for her. I don't need to look in the bag. I don't need to see if Cam sent her something. I trust her. I trust her. I trust her. I repeat those three words as I walk back down the hall, focusing on the gray walls, the stairs in the corner, anything but the bag that seems to be ticking like a bomb, a goddamn bomb that's about to blow. Screw mantras. I have to defuse the fucking thing. I pounce on it. Then I tell my frantic, jealous, angry snake of a self to calm down. I at least need to open it carefully so no one will know I snooped. I undo the staple that clips both sides of the bag together under the handles. Then I open the bag and peer inside. There's a box, the kind that probably holds a long dress. I wince and send a prayer somewhere to someone not listening, because no one listens, that this box is not what I think it is. When I pull out the box, there's a note card taped on the front. I want to rip it open and tear it to shreds. Instead, I undo the tape and open the card. Feels like a filthy, foul creature when I read the words. For my baby doll tomorrow night, Mr. Stewart likes his girlfriend to dress in a subtle, classy style. This dress should do the biz, and maybe even net you a nice fat extra chunk of tips. He's that kind of man, my favorite kind. Big-ass tipper for a job well done. Who takes care of you? I do. Always. I fall to my knees. No way. No fucking way. She's going back to him. She's working again. I can't believe she duped me. I can't believe I thought she'd changed.
Trey?
I raise my eyes, and there she is, looking like she's been battered in a hurricane, but I don't care because she's a liar.
Are you okay?
I clench my teeth. I can't speak. I can't breathe out a word. If I do, I will say something awful. Instead, I grip the note tighter, and soon I realize I've crumpled it up in my fist. I open my fist. I guess we should cancel our plans to see a movie with Jordan and Kristen tomorrow night. I see you have a prior engagement. I toss the note at her. She doesn't even try to catch it. It hits her chest with a thud and falls to the ground.
What are you talking about? Because I have had literally the worst day of my life. All I want is to see you and try to forget the things my mom said to me.
You'd probably have an easier time when you're Mr. Stewart's girlfriend tomorrow night. That might help you forget your mom and me. Oh, wait, you've already forgotten me, seeing as you're going back to Cam. I point at the bag, the gleaming, beating body of evidence before our very eyes. Irrefutable. She bends down, opens the balled-up note, and reads quietly. I push both hands rough through my hair, pull on it in exasperation. You fucking told me you ended it with him.
I did end it. This is a mistake. I texted him the night on the subway. I'll show you, I swear.
She grabs for her phone from her back pocket and scrolls through her messages. She finds it quickly and jams the device at me, showing me the note saying she's done working. I tap on the screen to open it. Oops, I say when I see the message is in draft mode. Looks like you forgot to send it. Guess that was a Freudian slip. Then I walk the fuck out before I say something I will regret for the rest of my life, even though the word is forming in my throat, on my tongue, on my lips. But I can't. I won't. I refuse to give that word voice, even if she's acting like one right now.
Harley. I stare at the window and the door, unable to move, even though he's long gone. I close my eyes briefly, wondering if this is the end of my penance, if this is how I finally escape my past, if this is the moment when I am finally good again with the universe, when I have paid back all that I have done. Maybe this is my final amends. Losing him. Losing Trey. But was I really that bad? Yes. The answer is always yes. I will always pay for what I did because I sold myself. I can try to hedge it. I can sugarcoat it by calling myself an escort, by having laid down limits. But in the end, I did what I did. I chose what I chose. And unlike the girls my mother covers for her articles, I wasn't forced. I wasn't coerced. I willingly walked men like dogs, dirty-talked them, and told them lies about lingerie. Then I took the money and laughed with my pimp. My man. My Cam. I collapse in a cross-legged heap on the floor, the dirty, faded, yellowed linoleum floor of this apartment building, and I clutch the bag Cam sent me, my arms wrapping around it, a life preserver in the shitstorm of my day. My life. I hold it tightly and reread the note, lingering on the last lines. Who takes care of you? That's right. Who does? Has there ever been any question? Has there ever been any other answer but Cam? He is the only person who has ever been here for me, who doesn't cringe or sneer or judge my past. Cam accepts me for who I am. Cam loves me for me. And he doesn't even try to fuck me or fuck with me. He is the only person I can ever rely on. When my world spins wildly into the sewer, he alone can pluck me out. He is the choice in my life. I chose him once. I can choose him again. Joanne has urged me to take ownership of my actions. I damn well will take ownership of this one, of the choice I'm making that is mine and mine alone. I reach into the bag, open the box, and gasp when I see a long, flowy dress in the color of champagne. It's gorgeous, and it's nothing a whore would wear. I run my tired hands over the dress. It is the only thing beautiful in my ugly life. I can't rely on my mother. I'm wrung dry from her, worn out and tattered from her cruel words. Nor can I lean on Trey. I thought I was falling in love, but he walked out without giving me a chance to explain. I rest my cheek against the soft chiffon. This is all I can depend on. Power, control, manipulation. Because there is no such thing as love. Love is a fiction, a fable, an ode spun by poets and drunks, a fantastical tale told across 1,001 nights. It is the genie in the bottle. It is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's the lie designed to seduce you. My almost now ex-boyfriend doesn't love me. My father never did. And the woman who raised me didn't want a daughter. She wanted a sister, a confidant, a friend. And she wound up with a whore. This is who I am. I discard my soft side, my loving side, my vulnerable side. With my chin held high and my dress in hand, I march up the stairs. I am, and always will be, a working girl. Where's Trey? What happened? Kristen asks when I unlock the door to the apartment. She's draped over Jordan, and they're watching a Mark Wahlberg flick on her laptop. She's compromising, and it's fascinating seeing what a boy and girl do as they come together. Fascinating like a science experiment I'm observing through a microscope. Because that's all this closeness, this kind of compromise will ever be to me. Something to take note of from a distance, to jot down on lined paper, but not to live. Trey was supposed to come up 30 minutes ago. Did he get lost in the basement? I shake my head. He left. I say in a dead voice. Then I head to my room and flop face first on my bed. I could cry. I could curl up in a ball. I could bang my fists into the bedspread until they turn blue. But there's nothing left in me. I have been drained of emotions, and maybe I never even had any in the first place. Maybe I'm missing the gene that lets you feel for real. Seconds later, I hear my door creak open. Hey, Kristen says in a soft voice. She pads over to my bed, sits down, and pets my hair. You okay? I wouldn't really use that word to describe what I'm feeling right now, I say in a muffled tone into the bedspread. What's going on? Wanna tell me? I flip over, stare up at Kristen, and shrug. Where to start? Imagine your worst-case scenario. Double that, multiply it by 10, and add 1,000. Oh, sweetie, she squeezes my arm. What happened? Tell me what happened. I want to know. You go watch your movie. I'll be fine. No, Jordan can wait. You're more important. I don't even like this movie. Then she calls out to Jordan, telling him to finish it on his own. He shouts back a victorious yes, and I hear the volume rise again on the film. Talk to me, she says. You let me in the other night when you told me. Now I'm in. Let me be in. Let me help you. I choke up, because her words might be the kindest ones I've ever heard. Then I suck back the tears, and I tell her about my shitty day. When I'm done, she gives me the biggest hug a girl could get. I may not know love, but I am starting to grasp the concept of friendship. This is the only thing I know to be true. Chapter 21. Harley. Slut is a dirty word. Slut is a loaded word. Slut is for microscopic miniskirts and tramp stamps and tottering red plastic high heels. Slut is for ripped t-shirts sliding down shoulders, for shots drunk off of bellies, for names written on bathroom stalls. Slut is for loose girls, for easy girls, and it is only for girls. That's why I hate the word. As I shower and shampoo my hair, I think about how I want to eradicate it from the English language. I want to extradite it, handcuff it, lock it up in the back seat of a sedan, and shove its head below the window where no one can see it. As I shut off the water and grab a towel, I think about 1,000 billion Sharpies blotting slut from every dictionary that ever existed in any language. Just the word itself sounds dirty. Even if it meant kitten or unicorn, it would still sound like a guttural insult. As I zip open my makeup bag, I picture a counter-revolution. I imagine girls taking back that word, co-opting it, owning it, declaring it theirs. Oh, Sally, you're such a funny slut. But see, there's nothing tramp-stampy or bathroom wall-worthy about the dress Cam bought me, the event I'm going to, or the way I look when I'm Layla. I blow dry my hair, apply my makeup, and zip up the champagne dress. I am classy. I am a prize. I am worthwhile. The only slutty thing I've ever done was mess around with Trey, and he's history. Grabbing the tattoo concealer I picked up this morning from the makeup counter at a nearby department store, I cover up the red ribbon on my shoulder, erasing my mom, erasing Trey. I am back to me. Kristen barricades the doorway. She presses her palms on each side of the frame, feet out wide, forming an X. I can't let you go, she tells me. Kristen, I'm fine. This isn't you. You told me you were done with that. Well, I'm done with being done. I'm back, and I have a job to do, so I really need to go, I tell her in a firm, clear voice. Harley, she says, sounding wistful as she shakes her head once. Tell me how I can help you. I don't need help. I don't know what to do, but I know this isn't what you want. Actually, I correct, it is what I want. It's the way for me. And if you don't move, I'm going to be late for a very important fake date that will net me a few $1,000s for rent. I add, figuring that will convince Kristen to move. She doesn't. I sigh heavily. Kristen, I appreciate this. I truly do. You're trying to stage an intervention or something, and I will grant you mega BFF points for that. Seriously, you have earned a big-ass friendship bracelet or something, so thank you. But this is my choice, and I am fine with it, and I really need to go because there is a car waiting for me. She sags and relinquishes her post, holding her arm out in a defeated gesture. Thank you. Wait, tell me where you're going, just in case something goes wrong. What? You think Mr. Stewart is going to shank me? I have no idea, but it would just make me feel better if, God forbid, something happens to you. Fine, I relent. I'll be at the Parker Meridian. Then she wraps me in a hug. I love you, Harley. I do. I know this is your choice, and I don't like it, but I'm still your friend, and I won't stop being your friend even if I disagree. Okay? You need to know that. I will be by your side. The back of my eyes sting, and I suck in the tear that threatens to ruin my perfectly applied mascara. Don't make me cry, I whisper and squeeze back. Oh, and that was the nicest thing anyone has ever said to me. So, thank you for being a friend. Her friendship is the closest thing I've ever felt to some kind of love. Inside the air-conditioned town car, it's as if I'm in a capsule, transporting me in its secure, hermetically sealed spaceship to a better planet, one where these messy things called feelings no longer prick me like porcupine quills. On the planet I'm rocketing to, we strip ourselves of emotions. We are stronger, safer, better like that. Cam shakes his head in admiration. He drinks me in from top to bottom and back again, that appreciative gaze operating at full wattage. Dressed in black pants and a bright purple shirt, he's holding a worn paperback, and his grin is so wide he's like a neon sign of Vegas waiting in the lobby for me. Seeing him is like a hit, an inhalation, a relief, a faint drifting off to someplace else where no sounds permeate my ears. Where no sights invade my vision, where I take a drink of something blue and sugary a waiter brings me, and nothing in this heartless city, no boys, no blackmail, no mom, no naked men in halls, no affairs I didn't want to know about, no secrets, no empty spaces, can ever touch me.
Perfection, Layla,
Cam says. And hearing him say my name is like lightness, like a whisper that fades away into nothing, into sweet oblivion. He plants a delicious kiss on my cheek, and it feels as if he's transmitting bionic powers to me, and they're surging through my blood, turning me invincible. Cam says, taking a step back for another view.
I knew this dress would accentuate all the assets Mr. Stewart likes in a girlfriend.
Speaking of, anything I need to know about the job? Cam gives me the download.
He loves elephants, okay? Elephants are his passion, and he is a huge supporter of Save Orphaned Elephants. He's being honored as one of the gold level givers. He has the head table, and you're his girlfriend. Anyone asks what you do, you're a model. That's all you need to say. You're a model, you're crazy for him, and you care so very deeply for the plight of the orphaned elephant.
He says, placing his hand on his heart. My lips curve up in a conspiratorial grin. I can do that.
I'll be kicking it at the bar on the second floor. Nothing is going to go wrong, but just think of me as your buffer, if you need one.
He slaps the paperback against his other palm.
Now you do your thing, I'll do my thing, because I just got to the good part in Bridget Jones' diary, and I'm dying to see how it all plays out.
You're reading Chicklet?
It's just a damn good story. Get your pretty ass upstairs. He's waiting at the hotel bar, and you'll go up to the ballroom together. Arm in arm, baby. Arm in arm. You stay by his side all night long and make us proud, baby doll. Now, no more cheek kisses from me, because I don't want you smelling like me. I want you smelling like a beautiful model who loves elephants.
At 5'8", I tower over the squat and balding Mr. Stewart, but he doesn't seem to mind. He's hooked his hand possessively around my waist, and he taps my hip bone now and then, as if this is our long-standing little lover's gesture. We're at the front of the ballroom, near the stage, and we don't have to mingle because everyone wants to mingle with him, the guest of honor and his model girlfriend. Black-tied waiters circle and offer sparkling drinks and champagne flutes. I politely decline. Mr. Stewart does as well, then returns his attention to a portly businessman next to him who's discussing a recent news story about elephants. I nod thoughtfully as they chat, squeeze Mr. Stewart's arm now and then, bat my eyes, and gaze adoringly at him like a proud girlfriend. I am giving it more than 110%, and Cam will be thrilled with my report card, since Mr. Stewart is clearly besotted.
It's terribly sad, isn't it?
The portly man says.
That's why we want to earn as much as we possibly can to save the African elephant from extinction, my date says. It's so sad how close they are to being wiped out. It's a genocide of animals, and all for their tusks to be made into useless little trinkets and statues.
He turns to me.
Don't you agree, my sweetheart?
I nod wholeheartedly, bring my hand to my heart. I want to live in a world where I don't have to say to my kids someday, this is where the wild things were. I want to say, this is where the wild things are.
I couldn't agree more,
the businessman says, and wipes a small tear from his eye. Someone clinks a fork against a glass, and the sea of glamorously attired men and women in tuxes and evening gowns turns to the stage. Thank you so much for coming, a woman in a modest black dress says after clearing her throat. We are so grateful for all of you, and we hope you are having a wonderful time. Before we sit down to eat, we want to extend a heartfelt thank you to one of our most generous supporters, Mr. Stewart. The crowd claps, and the chandeliers cast a warm glow around the cavernous ballroom as all eyes turn to the man next to me. He takes a quick bow, waves, and then slips his hand around my waist again. I plant an adoring kiss on his cheek. He looks at me and smiles, a wide, happy, gooey smile that tells me I've earned that big-ass tip, since he believes so thoroughly in the illusion I've created for him. I am his girlfriend. For tonight, I am absolutely his girlfriend. Chapter 22. Trey.
When I reach the sixth floor, I race out of the elevator and down the hall, praying Michelle is still here. I called her once, but it's Friday night, so who the hell knows if she's still working. I yank open the door to her office suite.
Trey,
she says with surprise. A black purse is slung over her arm, and she's dressed in a pencil skirt and a sleeveless top. Weird. She's not wearing her shrink uniform, and it's jarring to me to see her like this, as if I ran into a teacher at the mall outside of her natural element.
What can I do for you? I'm just on my way to the theater.
What are you seeing? She flashes a quick smile.
Crash the Moon.
Oh, cool. I've never seen it, but I heard it's good.
It's amazing. I've seen it several times. This will be my first time seeing it after it swept the Tony Awards. Best show, best director, best actress. But enough about me. What can I do for you? We're going to need to talk and walk so I don't miss curtain.
I fucked up big time, I admit as we head back into the hallway.
Then unfuck it up,
she says, as if that's the easiest thing in the world. She hits the down button on the elevator panel. How?
Well, considering I don't know what you did, the answer may vary, but it almost always starts with a heartfelt apology.
On the ride down, I tell Michelle what happened yesterday with Hartley, how I freaked out when I saw the bag from Bloomingdale's. I didn't even give her a chance to explain, but the fact is she doesn't have to explain. I believe her. I know I overreacted because that's what I do.
We reach the lobby and leave the building together.
You need to work on that, Trey. You have a lot of anger, and you have some insecurity. But most of all, you let fear of feeling control you. You can shut off and shut down, but none of those reactions are ultimately going to heal your heart. What will help you is speaking your truth. But don't jump to conclusions. Don't make assumptions. Say only what you know to be true.
She instructs me as I keep pace with her down Lexington Avenue. She looks at me as we slow at the crosswalk.
What is the one truth you most want to speak?
A bus rolls to a stop, fumes pouring out and flooding the muggy June night. It's sticky hot, and the nearby garbage can is overflowing, and the city makes me crazy. And I don't even know if I want to be in New York anymore, in the middle of all these piss-stained sidewalks and never-ending garbage. But in spite of all that is ugly, there is her. Harley is what I want. She is the truth I most want to speak. I tell Michelle what I want to say to her.
Good, she says and smiles. And now, I want you to remember, even if it feels scary to say that, I believe in you. I know you can do this. And don't forget, we have a lot of other issues to work on still, so you better show up for your next appointment.
Then I say goodbye, grab my phone from my pocket, and dial Kristen as fast as I possibly can. But my fingers are shaky and I miss a number, so I try again. I miss another number. One more try and still my fingers keep slipping off the dial pad. I remind myself to slow down, to calm down, to stop being eaten alive by impulses. I don't have to grab hard at what I want and then run like hell from what scares me. I can take a moment, take a breath. The call goes through this time. Kristen answers on the second ring. Hey, it's Trey. How are you?
I'm good,
she says with a small laugh.
Thanks for asking.
So, I begin as I head north on Lexington, but I don't even know if I should be heading north. She could be anywhere in the city. Do you know where Harley is? She went to some... I pause, fighting every instinct to spit out the next words in disgust, and instead I manage to be calm. Some event. She went to some event.
Yeah, I know where she is. But if you're going to fuck her up more, I'm not going to tell you. You did a number on her, Trey.
I nod, absorbing the blow, deserving it. I know, I'm sorry.
You need to tell her that, Trey,
she says. And I can picture Kristen, hands on her hips, sharp-eyed stare through those red cat's eye glasses, all intense and serious. I will.
And she is not in a good place. Her mother worked her over yesterday and said awful things, and then you walked out and didn't even give her a chance, and she's a mess, but she doesn't even realize it because she's trying to be all tough and badass.
Shit, I say, feeling horrible for adding to her misery yesterday. I knew it was bad with her mom, but that bad?
Like you wouldn't even believe,
Kristen says, punctuating each word as if she can emphasize the awfulness more that way.
So you need to promise me, if I tell you where she is, that you're not going to ruin things for her.
I won't.
And I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for her, because I tried to stop her. I tried to keep her from going, but she's spiraling bad. So if you can be the one to save her, then do it. But if you're going to show up and make her feel like shit, then I will fucking break your knees.
I stop in my tracks, back into a doorway of an office building closed for the night. Kristen, you are one scary bitch, and I would never cross you, and that is not why I want to know where she is. I want to apologize. I want to grovel. I want to tell her I want her back. That I want her. Always.
Well then, as Carrie's best friend said in Sex and the City, go get our girl. She's at the Parker Meridian, ballroom level.
I punch a fist in the air. I owe you big time.
If you save her, I owe you.
The Parker Meridian is a swank hotel on 56th Street near Central Park. It's stylish and cool, with one of those sleek glass entryways tucked into a gray brick building. The kind that's understated, that says if you need to know we're here,
You don't deserve to know who we are. But inside, the lobby is overwhelming with towering white columns and slick marble floors. I'd stand out if this weren't the type of hotel that attracted all kinds. Actors, rock stars, and businessmen. So I walk past dressed-down dudes like me in boots and jeans, as well as the tuxed-up and bow-tied guys and the women in slinky dresses on their arms. A metal sign by the escalator tells me there are several ballrooms, so I decide to start on the third floor. I ride up the escalator, mentally talking back to my nerves that are operating on overdrive. I don't want to fuck this up, but I know I have to rescue her before she falls too far away from herself. Her mom might have kicked and beaten her while she was down, but I delivered a punishing blow, and now I need to undo it. Stepping off the escalator on the second floor, I notice a dude in the bar reading Bridget Jones' diary. Weird choice for a guy, but he seems to be the happiest fella in the world, lost in a book. Fine, whatever. I head up another flight. Soon, I find the ballroom on the third floor, and sounds filter out. Waiters serving drinks, glasses being clinked, and small talk being exchanged. I stop at the doors, and my heart rises to my throat, then lodges there. I stare at the sea of people, talking, toasting, laughing. They're milling about and chatting, so dinner hasn't started yet. I survey the massive room, scanning for her, wishing I had infrared glasses that would zero in on her instantly. But then, it's not that hard to find the girl you're in love with, because she's often the only one you see. There she is, near the stage, a closed-mouth smile on her beautiful face, that dress nestled against her body like it was made for her. Her arm is tucked into the crook of her date's elbow. I press my fingers hard, hard, hard against my temple to remind myself to think about anything but this red-hot jealousy. I step into the hallway and flatten myself against the wall, as if no one can see me that way, which is stupid. But still, I need these racing feelings to die down so I can figure out what to do. I don't even have a game plan. What kind of dumbass am I to show up at a formal event without even an idea of what to do? But hiding here sure as hell won't help me get the girl back. I flash back on the last week with her, the nights we spent, the things we shared, the stories we told. They fill my body with strength and fortitude. I turn around, peer into the ballroom, and assess the options. I spot a door leading into the kitchen, then take note of how close it is from where Harley's standing with the little dude by her side. I walk into the ballroom, and a woman in a black dress is now on stage, clearing her throat, speaking into a microphone.
"Thank you so much for coming,"
she says, as I thread through the crowds in Harley's direction, hoping, praying I can whisper in her ear, grab a quiet moment.
"We are so grateful for all of you, and we hope you are having a wonderful time. Before we sit down to eat, we want to extend a heartfelt thank you to one of our most generous supporters, Mr. Stewart."
Everyone claps, and then the short guy with Harley takes a bow and waves. Harley plants a kiss on his cheek that makes my stomach churn. I grab hold of a chair so I don't topple over.
"And now, I'd love to invite Mr. Stewart to the stage to say a few words,"
the woman says, and Harley lets go of his arm, squeezes his hand, and watches him walk to the stage. I am withering as I witness her work. But yet, this is the moment. This is my golden fucking opportunity, and it's not going to come around again. I seize it, moving quickly to where she stands. As I near her, I'm sure everyone can hear my heart beating at this frantic pace, like it's riding on a slingshot to the moon, and its safe passage hinges on the next 10 seconds of my life. I reach her, tap her shoulder, and whisper her name. She looks at me, shock in her eyes for a nanosecond, that quickly morphs into a cool plastic mask. Distance. She's keeping her distance. "Can I talk to you?" I whisper. She shakes her head. "That won't do. That won't fucking do at all. I didn't come all the way in here for this. I came for her, and I'm not leaving without her." I am deeply honored to see all of you here tonight, to know that you have come out to help the plight of orphaned elephants as well. Mr. Stewart begins from the stage. The lights shine brightly on him, and I hope to hell they blind him to the audience and to what I'm about to do. As he keeps speaking, I eye the door to the kitchen, then the stage, then her. I can do this. I have to do this. I inch closer, lean in, and whisper in her ear. I'm so, so sorry for what I said, and I'm so fucking in love with you, and I can't stand the thought of losing you, Harley. Please talk to me. She doesn't speak, but her breath catches in response, and that's all I need to know. I nod to the kitchen door, not far from here. She says yes with her eyes, and I step away first, not drawing attention, not making a scene. She follows me, so casually, so coolly. She could even be heading to the ladies' room to powder her nose, for all they know. Well, if the ladies' room were in the kitchen. But I stop caring what anyone else thinks when I push open the silver door, and seconds later, she's behind me. Waiters bustle in and out with plates spread across their arms, and cooks serve food for the next round of servers. They're too busy to care about us.
What the hell?
She holds her hands out wide in question. The softness of the moment has unraveled.
You can't just come in here and do this, Trey. You can't. I am working. I am on a job. And you can't show up and whisper this shit in my ear and make it seem like everything is okay. You can't,
she says, but her voice is trembling with emotion, on the brink of tears. But it's true, Harley. It's true, and I'm sorry I was a dick yesterday. I'm sorry I freaked out. It's not like I know what the fuck to do when I feel this way. I've never felt this way. I barely even know what it is. But I know I'm crazy about you, and I'm in love with you, and I love you. And it's real and true and messy and sloppy, and I don't care, because I want you back. I want you with me. I want an us. I want you, I say. And I am helpless before her. I am serving myself up to her, giving her my bleeding heart, and hoping to hell she doesn't take a knife and stab it to pieces, then eat it for a snack. She winces, as if this pains her.
How can you do this?
She speaks in a low voice.
How can you just say these things? It's so unfair. I'm working. Don't you get it? This is me. This is who I am. This is where I belong. This is the only place I've ever belonged. This is my job. You fell in love with a whore, okay? I know that's what you were going to call me yesterday,
she says, nailing me with cutthroat honesty. But I didn't, I plead. I didn't say that. Because you're not. You're not a whore. You're not a slut. You're not anything but the most amazing, resilient, badass, tough, cool, hot, smart, and brave person I have ever known. I take a step closer, risking it, reaching for her hands. She doesn't brush me off, but she doesn't push me away either. You told me I was brave, but I think you are too. And I want to be brave with you, Harley, and stupid with you. We can be better together. She glances to the door, her eyes etched with longing. But for what? For what's out there with that short little dude who hired her to play pretend? Or what's here? Harley, I say, gripping her hands tighter. She starts to squeeze back, and the small gesture emboldens me. You don't belong to him or them.
I do,
she says, but her voice is fading out, like maybe she doesn't believe it anymore.
It's the only thing I've ever belonged to.
I shake my head adamantly. No. You belong to a stained glass window in an abandoned building. You belong to the flower in the junkyard. You belong to the beach that you miss. You belong to your shoes, even those Mary Janes I hate, but also your combat boots that I love. I tell her, and her lips part. Her shoulders rise, and she laces her fingers through mine. She is all I will ever want on this earth, and I have to make sure she knows without a shadow of a doubt that we might be damaged, but we are perfectly damaged together. You belong to the beer you never drink, and to your friend Kristen, and to that group that I used to wish I never went to. But now I'm so damn glad I did, because it might not be how I met you, but it's how I fell in love with you. And you belong to my brothers, I say. And it's then that a tear slides down her cheek, and to the tree you kissed. Most of all, you belong to the ugly beautiful. You belong to this messy, crazy, brave, and honest love. She breaks her hold on my hands to loop her arms around my neck, her body trembling against mine. She doesn't seem as if she ever wants to let go as she brushes her hands against the ends of my hair and says in a broken voice, but one that is still so strong,
Trey Weston, when I walked into No Regrets more than 6 months ago, I had no idea that I was getting a whole lot more than a tattoo, that I was getting you and us and a place to belong, because I belong to us.
The breath I didn't know I was holding, the fear that lined my heart, falls away, crumbles to the ground, turns to dust and shadows. I pull her close, never wanting to let go, but she pushes back, her palms firm against my chest.
But you have to understand that you can't freak out all the time, she says. My past is messy, and it's unfinished, and it will spill over into the present and the future, and you can't walk away when that happens.
I make the easiest promise in the world when I say, I won't. I promise.
Then take me out of here.
I glance at the door we came through, then look for another one. A waiter about my age with a pierced ear and a tat barely visible on his neck that he's trying to hide under his white button-down shirt grips my shoulder. There's another door that way. It'll take you to the escalators. I clap him on the back. Thanks, man.
Harley. I have to tell Cam, I say as we step onto the escalator. I expect Trey to fume, but he doesn't.
But you're going home with me.
Seriously? I roll my eyes. Of course I am. Tonight. Every night. Always. I want to run down these moving stairs with him, leap off the escalator like a ballerina, and fly out of here. Not because I'm running away, but because I'm running to something. I'm running to a new beginning, a new start, a new hope, where I don't erase the past, where I own the past, but I claim the present and all of the future too. Except, I don't want to trip on an escalator and catch my dress in the metal teeth of these steps. So I walk carefully in my 4-inch heels, then turn the corner to the bar. Trey waits by the door as I find Cam where I left him, parked happily in a black leather chair with chrome armrests, a vodka glass on the table in front of him, his paperback open wide. He's chuckling to himself, shaking his head as if he just can't believe what he's reading. I am nervous as I walk to him, the unmistakable sound of my heels clicking against the floor. But I'm also not nervous, because I can be scared and I can be strong at the same time. Hi, Cam. He looks up, surprise registering in his big baby blues.
What's going on, baby doll? Is he giving you trouble? 'Cause if he is,
he says, his voice trailing off as he smacks a fist into his other palm. I shake my head. No, he's a very nice man. But I can't do this anymore. He sets his book on the table and rises.
Now, you don't mean that. You're just nervous. You need your old man Cam to give you a pep talk? That's what I'm here for.
No, I don't need a pep talk. I'm sorry, Cam. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm sorry to walk out in the middle of a job. I'll pay you, if you want, for the money you're losing. And I'll give you the dress back, too. And I'm sure you want to convince me. And there was a time a few weeks ago in Bliss when I wanted to be convinced. But not anymore. I have to let Layla go, Cam, I say. And there's a note in my tone like begging, as if I'm pleading for him to go gently into the night, to let me float away like a bubble blown into the breeze. but there's another part of me that's firm and resolute in a way I wasn't at Bliss. I was toying then, teasing then, and he knew it. Now I am serious and he senses the change. I have to let her go for me, and I have to let her go because I want to know if I can love for real with that boy over there. I say, gesturing at Trey, who's waiting, patiently as he can, and I know this is progress for him, by the entryway to the bar. Cam stomps his foot and curses loudly. Fuck. He turns around, grabs his hair in his hand, and pulls hard. He's such a big man, but something about him right now, the foot stomping, the hair pulling, reminds me of an angry leprechaun. He whirls back to me, grits his teeth, and blows out steam.
No. Really? You're messing with me, aren't you?
No, I'm not, I say, standing my ground, shaking my head. This is my choice. I have to do this. I flash back to my conversation with Joanne about accountability, about ownership. I don't know if I'm doing it right, but I'd like to think I'm starting to figure it out. I'm stumbling and bumbling and messing it up, but at least I'm starting to speak the truth.
I don't want to say goodbye.
For the first time, Cam sounds like he's whining, a chink in his cool-as-a-cucumber style. I know, but I have to try. I have to do this. He grabs my shoulders, grips me tight.
No, you don't have to do this,
he says, his hot breath painting my cheek. I can feel the burn of the vodka he just downed. Cam, I stare sharply at his hands that pin me. I do have to do this. He moans angrily and narrows his eyes, but he lets go of his hold on my shoulders.
I just got you back, baby doll. Don't do this to me.
Cam, I'm sorry. His eyes light up with a sneaky sort of glow.
Then I'll beg. I told you when you came to my office that I'd beg you, and I'm not fucking above begging.
He drops to his knees instantly, raises his face, and looks at me with those big blue eyes. He clasps his hands together. Holy shit, he was serious.
Please don't go.
A part of my heart aches, not just for him, but for me letting him go too.
But this isn't fair. You leave me, you come back, you leave me again,
he says, shaking his clasped hands at me to emphasize his point.
And I don't like it. I don't like being jerked around.
All my instincts tell me to fall to my knees, to hug him, to say I'm sorry I disappointed him too. But I keep my body still. I can't give in to him, and I can't give in to my past. I want my future. I want to make the better choice now. I never meant to hurt you, and I'm sorry I jerked you around, Cam. But there's nothing you can do to change my mind. I have to move on.
You belong with me.
He pounds a fist against the floor.
You're mine. You're my Layla,
he says, grasping to keep me. Cam, I say softly but firmly. You had Layla, but that's not me anymore. I have to be Harley now. Only Harley. He sighs heavily, then bangs his forehead once, twice, three times against the cool hardwood floor of the bar. It must hurt like hell. When he raises his head, I can see the start of a red, angry bump, but also the resignation in his eyes. I offer him a hand. Come on, get up. Let me say a proper goodbye.
Damn it to hell,
he mutters as he stands up from his plaintive post. Then I look him in the eyes, and I speak from the heart. I want you to know, you gave me something that mattered deeply to me, that I needed desperately at that time in life. You gave me choices, you gave me control, and you gave me a place to belong, and I don't regret anything I did, because everything I did brought me to where I am today, and I will never regret you. You were there for me more than my own mother ever was. I watch him, saying nothing, trying to gauge his reaction, predict his next move. He's still as his eyes glass over. Then he abandons the begging and pleading.
I'm going to miss you. Like, miss you for real, Harley,
he says. And I don't blanch when he uses my real name, because that's who I am to him now. I am shedding Layla, right here, right now, leaving her behind. I hug him one last time. I want to tell him I will see him again, that we'll grab a cup of coffee and catch up. But we won't, and we shouldn't, and that's okay too. Some people come into your life for a little while to help you through. Some stay a lifetime. Cam and I had our moment, and now the moment is gone. But it won't be forgotten. I won't forget him. I won't forget how he took care of me when nobody else would. That's when it hits me. In some warped way, Cam was like family to me too, only better than my flesh and blood parents. He groans and flubs air through his lips, like he's letting out a long train of steam.
I'm not going to say I want this, but if this is what you need, baby doll, then I'm not going to stand in your way. Mr. Stewart is going to pitch some kind of fit, but I'll take my lumps like a big boy,
he says, nodding, and I can see the gears in his sneaky brain kicking in when he adds,
I'm just going to go up there, tell him you ate something nasty, you threw up something fierce, and you're sick to the stomach and had to go home, because that's about the only reason that won't have him slicing off my neck.
I laugh once, but hope he's joking. I don't want your neck sliced off.
Believe you me, nor do I. I like what's above the neck and below it. I'll get the hell out of here before I try to steal you back.
I hug him, and I'm betting Trey is quaking in his boots. And if he is, then that boy will just have to deal, because I need to say goodbye to this man who loved me too. We leave the bar together, and Cam stops when he sees Trey, shakes a finger at him, huffs out through his nostrils. For a fleeting moment, I can see the worst unfolding. But instead, Cam takes Trey's hand in his, then places his other hand on Trey's shoulder.
Now listen, you better fucking take care of her, because I'm about to endure a shitstorm up there for her. I'm letting her go, and this better be real. And you better love her and treat her like a queen, because she deserves everything good in the world. Got it?
Trey is stunned speechless. His jaw hangs open, then he quickly recovers and nods.
Yes, sir.
Then Cam marches upstairs to fix the mess I made for him. Forget the myth of the hooker with a heart of gold. He's the pimp with one. I turn to Trey. I'm yours now, and you're mine.
You better fucking believe it,
he says. He grabs my hand, and we run like hell out of the Parker Meridian and into the New York night to a new beginning. Chapter 23. Harley. Breathless. I am breathless from running, from the night, from being kissed senseless on the cab ride downtown, from the anticipation that this is it. Trey shuts the door behind him, and we are back where we were several nights ago, his apartment. And now, this is the unknown. This is all blind trust and faith, the leap off the dock into the dark waters, with the hope the current won't pull you down. I hope. I have so much hope now, so much more than I had mere hours ago, and it's amazing how hope can be replenished like a geyser, and you can be overflowing. I have hope for the future, for love, for happiness, for the end to my empty, aching need for a fix. This is more than a fix. This is real. Because he is not 25 for me. This is the other side, all the way on the other side. Trey is number one on a list I will never keep again. And I am so in love with Trey, I can barely stand it. I can barely hold the words inside myself any longer. I want to tell him, to shout it, to sing it. I'm so in love with you, I say, because I can. All this honesty, all this openness, without guise, without tricks, It's like the sky is expanding, spreading. As it stretches, I stretch. It feels good, and it hurts at the same time. We stumble into the entryway, all hands and arms tangled up together.
I am so fucking in love with you,
he says hungrily, and he loops his arms around my neck, tucks his face in my hair, and breathes me in as if I'm his oxygen. I've never known what it's like to be cherished, but I'm starting to get a sense, and it's a heady feeling. I'm no longer a prize, but a treasure. His treasure. Somehow we manage to move to the futon, because it's clear this night is going horizontal. So, what now? I ask as he touches my arms, my hair, my waist. He can't keep his hands off me, and I'm pretty sure I want them all over me.
I guess that's up to you.
I run my finger along the waistband of his t-shirt, my thumb grazing the hard planes of his belly. He's mine. This man is mine, and I'm terrified, but certain at the same time. I know what I want.
What do you want?
He asks, his lips quirking up. I want my first.
Are you sure?
I nod. So sure. I want to know what sex feels like. I want to know what it's like with someone I'm in love with. He swallows, breathes hard.
Harley, you know this is going to be like a first time for me, too.
What do you mean?
I've never had sex with someone I love,
he says, running his hands through my hair, letting it fall through his fingers. All the while, he never takes his eyes off mine.
Sex has always been separate. I've never been in love before, so this is like a first time for both of us in a way.
The moment curls in on itself, and I am sure time and space have narrowed to only the two of us, here on his couch. There are no cars outside, no sounds, no noise, no buildings, no night, no day. It is Trey and me. Only us, only now, only this. He takes the pad of his thumb, brings it to his tongue, and licks it. He presses the thumb against my shoulder and rubs off some of the tattoo concealer.
I'm giving you a new one soon, but I still like to see it on you because it reminds me of the night we met. And you were different than anyone I'd ever known, and I wanted to know you. And then you came back into my life like it was fate.
I watch him rub his thumb across my shoulder, wetting and re-wetting it, like a restorer returning a work of art to its original glory. I don't know that my red ribbon is glorious, and I don't even know that it's what I want anymore, but it's a part of me, and it's going to become a better part of me. Then he's done, and with one finger, he pushes off the strap of my dress, letting it fall to my elbow. He bends his head to kiss my shoulder blade, and I shiver at the slightest touch. He reaches for my hands, pulls me up. Now I'm standing, and his arms are around my back.
I want to undress you,
he says in a hot, hoarse voice as his fingers reach the zipper of my dress and he unhooks it. He starts to slide down the zipper, but I can feel his hand shaking, and he can't undo it. Are you okay? I ask.
Yeah, just nervous, I guess.
You are? I never pictured you being nervous.
I am, he says, because I want it to be perfect for you.
It doesn't have to be perfect. We can keep practicing if it's not, I tell him, running my index finger softly against his cheek, tracing his scar.
Sign me up for lots of practice then,
he says, and returns to the zipper, easing it open, then gently pushing the dress past my shoulders, over my breasts, to my waist. He lets go, and the fabric falls into a silky pile on the floor. I step out of it, still wearing my heels. His hands follow the dress, down my hips, over my thighs, brushing my skin, and I melt into his touch. It all feels so natural and so right. He kneels at my feet, then slips off one shoe, and I'm back in time, picturing the night on my stoop when he took off my socks after I'd seen Cam. So much is similar, but so much is different. Here he is again, and we still want each other, but we want so much more, and we've let ourselves not only voice it, but feel it. We have finally given ourselves permission to let in that thing we barely understand. He runs his hand along the arch of my foot. I don't have a foot fetish, and I'm glad he doesn't either. But there's something so tender and caring about the way he's undressing me as he removes my other pump and I stand barefoot now. Every move, every touch is like the sweetest caress. Everything he does with care, and I feel like a new girl with him. Because I'm here with him, not for him. I haven't been ordered. I haven't been bought. And there are no step-by-step instructions given in advance. We are living each moment, seeing how each moment feels. Picking up my dress and my shoes, he brings them over to a chair, laying them down neatly. It's a small gesture, but the little things matter, and I kind of love that the dress isn't wadded up. When he returns, he looks me over, and there is something like reverence, like wonder in his green eyes, as if he can't believe he's here with me. "Will you take off the rest of my clothes?" I ask in a nervous voice. I know he will, but I don't want to take anything for granted, and I want to let him know what I want. He groans, and it's both an appreciative and terribly needy sound as he loops his arms around my back and unhooks my strapless bra. I grab it and toss it to the chair. In seconds, his hands are on my breasts.
"They're so fucking perfect. I can't stop touching them,"
he says as he cups my breasts.
"I know I'm supposed to be fighting any kind of addiction, but fuck that. I want to be addicted to your breasts. They deserve a shrine, Harley. I want to build a temple and dedicate it to your breasts."
"What will you call your temple?" I ask, playing along, grateful for a moment of levity in the midst of this intensity.
"My favorite D's."
I laugh. "You wish. They're not D's. C's, though."
"C, D, E, F, G, whatever they are, I fucking love."
He emphasizes that last word.
"Having my hands on them."
Then he squeezes them, hard.
"Sorry, I'm supposed to be gentle."
"It's okay. I like the way you touch me."
"You do?"
"Yes," I say. "You make me feel incredible."
"You are incredible,"
he says. He kneads them roughly once more, brushing his thumbs over my nipples. He moans, and I sigh at the same time, and we both laugh. "You forgot one more item to take off," I tease.
"I didn't forget. I just want to savor it."
Then he slides his hand between my legs. His eyes widen when he feels the cotton panel of my panties, touches me, learns how turned on I am. I rock into his hand.
"Fuck savoring. I need to get these off."
Then he is no longer slow or lingering. He is frenzied and fevered as he pushes them over my hips and down my legs. I am naked before him, and I love being naked with him. He eyes me greedily, drinking me in as if he's desperate for what's next.
"I want you, Harley. I want to sleep with you. I want to make love to you,"
he says, breathing out hard as he starts tugging off his own shirt.
"And I've never fucking said those words before. I have never said make love. I have never wanted to make love. And I think those words are cheesy and ridiculous. But they're not cheesy and ridiculous with you. Because I'm so fucking in love with you that I will say things I've never said. I'm dying for our first time."
Sparks of electricity zoom through me, and every single inch of my skin, of my body, of my heart is reaching for him, needing him, wanting him. I am longing for something I've never had before, and now I can't imagine being without. I am hot all over and tingling everywhere. My veins, my blood, my bones, everything is singing out to be touched. I grab at his waistband, fumble at the zipper, tug down his pants, all the while he's kicking off his shoes, trying not to trip over his clothes. Somehow, he manages to step out of his jeans and is now only in his boxer briefs, and we are both panting and frantic. "Condom," I say. "Do you have a condom?"
"Yeah,
He steps away from me to reach for a foil packet in the nightstand next to his futon. Then he pushes off his underwear, and he's naked and gorgeous and throbbing. I draw in a deep breath and bite my lip briefly. This is going to happen. This is real. I'm going to say goodbye to my virginity, and I'm going to have him inside of me. And I honestly don't know how there's room for him in me. Are you sure you're going to fit? I blurt out, a touch of nerves in my voice. He laughs once, wraps his hand around my waist, and tugs me gently down on the futon, laying me next to him, skin to skin, flesh to flesh. I look in his eyes, and I'm flooded with so many feelings. Love, lust, anticipation, fear. It is staggering, but I am ready.
I'm pretty sure the parts are designed to fit.
I gulp, bringing my hand to his belly, letting my fingers dance near his erection. You're just really big.
We'll take it slow, okay?
Yeah, I say, but I'm scared. I don't want my first time to hurt. I want it to be amazing, even if that's asking for the moon. I don't care. I want the moon and the sun and the stars with him.
Do you want to put it on me?
He hands me the packet. I look at it like it'll bite. Tell me how. He rips open the foil.
Pinch the top, then roll it on, he says,
and he moans in pleasure as I slide it on him.
See what you do to me? I get even more turned on just from you doing that. You can do anything to me, Harley. Anything.
I lie on my back, propped on my elbows, and foreplay is over, and that's fine, because the last several months have been foreplay, and now there is only this. When he hovers over me, my shoulders shake once, twice.
You okay?
Yes. No. I'm nervous as hell.
We don't have to,
he says, as if it pains him, but still, I love that he offers an out. I don't want an out. Then he teases me, rubbing the head against me through all my wetness, and it feels so good the way he's touching me. I start to spread my legs wider for him.
You're so wet, it's almost a sin for me to not go down on you, but I love that you're so wet,
he says. Then he pushes into me, not far, maybe an inch, hell, maybe even half an inch. I tense up. He meets my eyes, asks me with his if it's okay. It's okay, I tell him as I wrap my arms around his shoulders. You can come in more, I say, with a silly smile because the words sound silly. He slides in deeper, and I clamp my legs against his.
Are you sure?
I breathe out deeply, yoga breaths, deep, calming exhalations. Then I spread my legs again, relax my body, and tell myself that it will feel amazing because it's him. I close my eyes and nod into his shoulder, then run my hands down his strong back to his ass, guiding him. He sinks slowly into me, and the pain is intense. It's like my stomach has been jammed up into my neck. I am being stretched in directions I didn't know I had. This man is so big, and I don't know how he's fitting inside me. Oh, wait. I do know, because when he thrusts once, my spleen leaps into my chest. I grit my teeth and try to tell myself it'll be over soon, it'll be over soon, it'll be over soon. He's turned on. He'll pump once, twice, three times, and he'll come, and I can curl up and let the pain roll out to the night. Then I feel his breath on my neck, his stubble on my cheek, his hand on my hip.
Harley, I don't want to hurt you. I can tell you don't like it,
he says, but he's not mad. He's not hurt. He's simply being honest. And I decide to do the same. I open my eyes, look up into his. They're so earnest, so heartfelt. Yes, it hurts, but it's okay. I can handle the hurt, I say, and it's strange, but true, because maybe it hurts now, but it might not hurt the next time, or in 5 minutes, or in 5 seconds. And with that, I start to relax, to let go, to give in. As I do, I realize the pain is fading, and now I just feel full with him deep inside me. I let go of the tight grip I have on his ass, and of the way my strong thighs are holding him like a vice. Then he slips his hand between my legs, and he slowly, softly rubs me with his finger while he moves inside me. I gasp in pleasure for the first time. Oh! I let my eyes roll back into my head, and I can feel him smile.
That better?
Yes, I say with a happy sigh. More. He slides his finger across me, rubbing me, stroking me, all while sliding gently in and out, and the sweep of pleasure from his finger starts to consume me. And soon, I'm opening my legs farther, and I'm wrapping them around him, and I'm taking him in. And holy fuck, he's all the way in me, and it no longer hurts. It starts to feel good. This feeling of being filled, of his hard length moving in and out of me, of his nimble finger rubbing me. Then the tingling sensation grows stronger, ripples through my veins like a wave, and I shudder.
God, I fucking love this, Harley.
He groans as he touches me.
I fucking love being inside you. I love touching you. I love you so damn much.
His words thrill me. His feelings shred me. And soon, all the hurt washes away, and I am left with only the barest of essentials. This imperfect moment in time, with this perfectly damaged man who is mine, and who knows all of me, and still loves me, and still wants me, and doesn't want to turn me into his fantasy, but he wants us to create a new reality together. I wrap my arms around him, and he sinks deeper. The stretching is still bizarre. And it's delicious at the same time, and I want to feel every second of it as I start to rock with him, to move with him. And then his pants and groans aren't solo anymore. They're meshed with mine, with these sounds and noises I make as I gasp and moan from his finger working me over in the most delirious way, all while he thrusts into me. Trey.
Oh, fuck, Harley. Is there any chance you're going to come? Because I can't hold back much longer. I am so fucking turned on.
Yes, I answer, and I dig my nails into his back, so deep I'm leaving marks, but I have to hold on. I have to mark him. My body tenses. Then, it's like there are sparklers set off in my belly, lit up and burning brightly, and they become an explosion of color and light and sounds, and that sound is my sound. It's my voice. It's me, calling out his name. And then he's doing the same, chasing me into this sweet release on the other side. Here, where there is sex and love and sex, and they don't just spill over into each other. They are one and the same with him. Chapter 24. Harley.
I'll expect your first writing exercises on character development by the end of the week. You can deliver them via email. And remember to think about what makes each person unique. What events informed them, how they grew up, how they were raised. All of those are part and parcel of what makes a character in a story come alive.
My writing teacher taps the laptop screen for emphasis. I grew up strangely. I was raised in a topsy-turvy world. But now and then, memories flutter in and out of my mind of peaceful, sunny days from long ago. Maybe they're all part and parcel of me.
See you next week,
he says, then dismisses us. Summer classes have begun, and I'm hoping to enjoy writing again, that when I write for fun, it won't be so bone dry. Funny how blackmail can sap the love of something. I leave the classroom. Grab my sunglasses from my purse and slide them on as I head outside. I stop in my tracks when I see my mother waiting for me outside the building. She's been calling and writing to me for the last week, but I've ignored all her messages. Let's be honest, there's not much to say to each other. Harley, she says crisply from her post standing sentry on the sidewalk. Barb, I say, and this time I use her name not because she wants me to, but because she doesn't deserve to be called Mom. You haven't returned any of my calls, nor my emails. That is a correct observation. I see your reporter skills are strong, I say, and I can barely contain a wicked grin, because, holy cow, I sassed her. I talked back, and she's not used to it. She raises an eyebrow sharply, as if that action alone can bend me back to her will, into her submission as the sister she wishes I were. But I am not my mother's daughter anymore. There was a time when we were cut from the same cloth, but no more. In any case, I've decided to forgive you. Excuse me? I scoff. I think I might have heard you wrong. She nods. I have been thinking about what you did, your actions, your choices, and I have a way for you to be forgiven. I'm dying to know what she has in store. Oh, do tell. She gestures grandly to the modern building I just left. I pay for your college, and I am glad to do so, because education is a vital element in one's growth, and I will continue to do so under one condition. What's that? That you come home and live with me again. That way I can help you. Oh, I say, letting the one syllable last forever. Like rehab for my bad behavior? My sarcasm is lost on her. Yes, that's exactly what I would call it. We can start over. We can have nightly chats. We can have dinners together. We can be open about your whereabouts so you don't descend into your bad habits again. Right, because talking with her would change things. So, if I do this, I say, as if I'm truly trying her experiment on for size, would you be willing to go to Miranda and confront her about the blackmail? Because I'm pretty sure what she did in forcing me to write that book is illegal, and you could expose her since that's what you do. You expose people. She presses her plum-colored lips together as if she's considering my request. I could, but I'm not sure that's best. We don't really want that getting out, do we? I think it's best to let that sleeping dog lie. Oh, yeah, I say, nodding as if I completely agree. Definitely that one lie. I mean, sexting senators are so much important than editors blackmailing your own daughter. You wouldn't want that out, because that might besmirch your unblemished reputation. That's not it. I just think we could both benefit from moving on. What do you say? Truce? She extends her hand. I look at it like it's a diseased object. I don't think so. Then you leave me no choice but to cut you off. She parks her hands on her hips, waiting for me to grovel. She has the trump card, right? She thinks she can buy me back. She thinks she can buy my love. I shake my head. I'd like to cry, but my eyes are dried for her. I have no more tears. I have no more emotions to waste on her. So cut me off then, I say, like it's no big deal. She blinks, as if a UFO has just crashed through the sky, splattered onto the sidewalk, and little green men are pouring out of it, announcing they're from another solar system. She's as astonished at my brinksmanship as she'd be by the miniature aliens. Are you going to drop out of college? Become a hooker full-time? I point a finger at her. Actually, allow me to make a correction, since I know precision is important in your line of work, Barb. I wasn't a hooker. I was a call girl. I was a specialized one. A very high-class, high-price call girl. So guess what that means? I can't bother to contain the grin. This is wonderful. This is me snubbing out a cigarette with my pointy heel. What? She says with a quaky, wavering voice. I made some serious bank, and I saved every single penny of it. Never spent a dime. So you can't buy my love, and I don't need your money. Which means I don't really see that there's anything more for us to discuss. I could snap my finger, swivel around, then strut off, reality show style. But I don't. Instead, I simply walk away. And it hurts that she isn't who I wanted her to be. But it also feels good that I finally found the words to tell her so. In my own way, in my own time. I am not my past. I am my present. I am my future. The past can chase you if you let it. You can spend your life trying to outrun it, or you can stop running, turn around, and look it in the face. I've stared down my past, and now I'm moving on. I am more than my past. I am my future, and it belongs to me. Chapter 25. Trey.
Do you trust me? She rolls her eyes and says,
Duh, I thought we'd established that by now.
I know, but do you trust me to do this without watching? I want you to close your eyes, or else look the other way, okay?
Yes.
She sits on the stool, crosses her legs, and clasps her hands in front of her. She's wearing a jean skirt, black combat boots, and a tank top with a cartoon cat on it. In other words, she looks like my girl, and I fucking love it.
I'm not looking, I'm not looking, I'm not looking,
she says in a sing-song voice as she pointedly stares at the framed photos that line the walls of No Regrets. Blue butterflies on upper backs, stars on hips, dragonflies on forearms. The shop is closed now. It's nearing midnight on a Thursday, and I wanted to do this after hours when I'm not on the clock. Besides, it's a gift to her, an early birthday gift. I press the transfer paper on her shoulder, the drawing I made to replace the first time I marked her, with a design that kept her tied to her guilt, the red ribbon that was supposed to symbolize her love of her mom. She's moved past it now, and I want her to live a life with no regrets. And God damn it, if that's the name of our shop, then I need to be able to deliver. I'm building a red ribbon into a new design. An hour later, her eyes are still fixed on a point on the wall. Maybe the butterflies, or maybe the tribal ink next to it. Hard to say, because I've barely glanced at her. Only enough to know she's focused, and she's tough, and she's gritting her teeth through the pain that's very nearly over. I finish the final letter, giving a scripty end to the T in the words. Then I put down the needle, and she relaxes, her shoulders slumping forward. You did great, I tell her.
Now let's see if you did great,
she says.
Am I allowed to look?
Yes, you can look.
Harley. I can't stop staring at my shoulder. I trace my finger around the design, mesmerized by its beauty, by its perfectness, by what it means. Trey turned my red ribbon into a heart, but it's a badass heart, the edges of it torn and tattered. It's like the one on the notebook Joanne gave me, only it's not misshapen. It's whole, and it's complete, and it's tough as nails with the way it's frayed on the outside. An arrow pierces it, clear through the center from one side of the heart to the other. Then there are words in a V at the bottom. Carry my heart. It's so unbelievably perfect, I say, and I am awestruck. I love it so much.
You do?
His voice is wobbly. I glance up at him, barely able to tear myself away from the new ink. Are you kidding me? It's the coolest tat ever. It's perfect for me, and it's from you, and it means something. Why wouldn't I love it? He shrugs.
I was just hoping you would. I mean, I didn't want you to have to hunt down some other tattoo artist to redo mine, or worse, get laser removal.
I cup his cheeks, stubbly against my hands. This is never being removed. I love it, and I love you.
Happy early birthday.
My birthday's not for another month.
So, I like getting you stuff. I'll get you something else when you finally turn 20. What do you think about the arrow?
He returns his focus to his work. I love the arrow in the heart, I say. then consider it thoughtfully, running my finger across the art on my skin. Is it coming or going, though? He shakes his head.
Neither.
He reaches for my hand, links my fingers through his.
It's staying.
Like you, I say, and I'm vaguely aware that my voice has turned breathy. But then so has the moment, shifting into something more, something expectant.
Like me, and like you,
he repeats in a low, husky voice. In one swift move, he lets go of my hand and yanks off his own shirt. There, over his heart, he now has an arrow. It matches mine, and I am overwhelmed, bursting with heat and light and unfettered happiness. My hand is drawn to his chest, and I trace the tattoo, then kiss the arrow on his chest. I love it, I tell him.
It matches,
he adds playfully. Yeah, I say with a laugh. I figured that. Then, his hands are in my hair, and he's pulling hard, exposing my neck, kissing me, marking me, claiming me with his mouth. I respond instantly, my hands looping around his back, tugging him close. His breath is hot on me, and there's sweat on his neck from working, from inking me, and my skin is slick too, from the summer, from the heat, from the needle. And I want to have hot, sweaty sex in his tattoo parlor. I have become more forward, more outspoken in the last few weeks with him. So I unbutton his jeans, sliding them down to his knees, along with his boxers. I want you on the chair.
Gladly,
he says, and he takes a seat. And in seconds, he's grabbed a condom from his wallet and handed it to me. It's become our thing. I love to put them on him, and he loves it when I do. In an instant, he's hiked up my skirt, pulled my panties to the side, and is inside me. I groan as he fills me. Trey, I say, letting his name slide off my tongue in a sexy purr, because I love the way his name sounds when he's deep in me, as if I'm owning his name when we're together like this, when I take him all the way in.
So I guess this means it turns you on when I ink you,
he says in a hungry voice as he rolls his hips upward. I inhale sharply. I can feel him so deep inside me, and I'm still not sure I'm used to his size. But then, I don't know if it's something you get used to, or something you just thank the heavens for. Then lean your head back, let your hair fall down, and imagine you're on a wild motorcycle ride after midnight as he drives into you with abandon. And that's what he does, fucking hard and fast. Soon, I am panting and moaning, greedy for more of this heat, this love, this life. Yes, it turns me on when you ink me, I say, finally managing to answer in between my erratic breaths. But then, everything you do turns me on.
Good, because I want to do everything with you,
he says.
And right now, I want you to ride me hard, Harley. I want you to fuck me with everything you've got.
I take over the reins, my hands gripping his shoulders. I ride him up and down until my thighs are quaking. And even then, I keep going, watching as his face contorts in pleasure. And he tells me over and over how much he fucking loves me, and fucking loves fucking me, and fucking loves everything. His coarseness and his love send me spinning, and my body is consumed with wildfire, and the whole damn forest is burning down, taking everything in its wake. I shout his name, louder than I've ever been, and then he's doing the same, and we're both savage and sweaty and hot and horny as we collapse into each other's arms. He tosses the condom into the trash can next to us, then wraps his arms around me again. I don't let go for a long time, and he makes no move to pull apart. The longer we stay like this, the more I know that there is a difference between love and addiction. And this here with him, this is some kind of love, and some kind of good. My thoughts drift off, roaming these last few weeks, these last several months, how my life isn't black and white, but it's not gray either. It's bursting with colors, and sometimes they are shades of black as I grapple with the darkness and the fear that still lives inside me. And other days, it's purple or blue when I'm happy and sad at the same time. Some days, everything is orange and fiery, and I am alive and burning like the sun. I am learning to live with all these colors, all these pieces of me. I am beginning to stop swatting away the girl I was, because I can let go of who I used to be, but I don't have to hate her, nor do I have to be ashamed of who I was. She served a purpose. Layla freed me from my mom. Besides, had I not been Layla, I might never have met Trey. I trace my fingers over the trees on his ribs, the reminders of his brothers. Do you miss them?
Yes,
he says into my hair as he gently rubs his hand up and down my naked back.
But then, I have to believe there was a meaning behind it all. And look, if they hadn't died, I might never have become fucked up. And if I wasn't fucked up, I might not have met you.
I pull back to look at him. You're crazy, and I love you're crazy, because I was thinking the same thing. Well, about me.
If we weren't addicted, we might never have met.
So maybe there's a purpose to everything, even the shitty stuff in life, I say. Even Miranda. Then, in a low, worried voice, I haven't heard from her in a while.
But you're not supposed to, right? I mean, it's over.
Yeah, it's over, but the book will come out. And what if someone recognizes themselves in it? Because some days, it's hard to believe our debts are really paid off. Are scores ever truly settled? Can we ever stop looking over our shoulders? I wonder if I'll always sleep with one eye open, always watch my back to see who's going to try to trip me up next. God knows there are so many more people who could surface, who could emerge, like a mirage in the desert made real, and demand something from me. More blood, more words, more ink.
Then we'll deal with it then, together. Trust me, there is nothing, not a thing on this fucking planet that we cannot get through. I promise you.
He says, and he taps my arrow.
Staying.
Staying, I repeat. The arrow is staying. Now I know. Now I get it. I understand. This is love. It's not a game. It's not a razor's edge. It's not a transaction. The poets are right. The dreamers are right. The lovers are right. This isn't nothing. This is everything. 4 weeks later, Joanne knits another row on a hot pink pair of socks as she begins the meeting. We go round and do the introductions at the girls-only meeting. Chloe, Ainsley, and a new girl named Katrina. They say their hellos, and we say hi back. Then it's my turn. I'm Harley, and I'm a sex and love addict, I say, and Joanne beams at me. It's been a few weeks now since I started using my real name here. It still feels weird and clunky after having the mask of Layla for so many months. Hi, Harley, the other gals say to me. Then we talk and we share. And look, I'm not going to say I am sunshine and unicorns and the girl who overshares. I'm still mostly a closed book. And I don't know that healing means being open about everything. Sometimes I just practice the words in my head. I like the way they sound as I rewrite my story. I'm Harley. I'm a sex and love addict. I'm in recovery. I was a virgin. I was a call girl. I was my mother's daughter. Now, I am a friend. I am a girlfriend. I am trying. I am 20, and I don't care how many guys I've kissed. There is only one guy I am kissing and will kiss, now and always. And that has to count for something. When the meeting ends, I chat with Joanne for a few minutes, then say goodbye, because it's my birthday. And I'm having cake and watching a movie with Trey, Kristen, and Jordan. I rush up the steps and out onto the street, heading to my apartment. For a brief moment, my stomach cramps, as if I've run too far, and I have a stitch in my side. It reminds me of field hockey practice when we do laps. But the feeling fades quickly, and I'm grateful for its exit, because it's time for cake when I unlock the door to my apartment. Kristen's in the kitchen, lining up 20 pink and yellow birthday candles in a circle on the chocolate cake. Can't promise it'll be any good. I'm not really known for my mad kitchen skills, Kristen says with a shrug. I bet it's fabulous, I say, and squeeze her arm. Trey and Jordan join us in the kitchen as Kristen lights the candles, and they all start singing. I don't even pretend to act humble or like it's no big deal. It is a big deal. I'm celebrating my birthday the way I want, with my friends and my boyfriend, with a cake that's not made by my mom, and my life is finally starting to feel like my own, moment by moment, like I belong to myself. So I sing along, and the four of us are loud as loud can be. Now make a wish, Kristen says, gesturing to the candles. Leaning close, I gather my breath and blow the flames out at once. I wish for more moments like this.
What did you wish for?
Trey asks as he reaches for my hand, laces his fingers through mine. I love that we hold hands, that we held hands as friends, and now as more. I can't tell you or it won't come true. He sticks out his tongue at me as Kristen serves the cake on small plates for each of us.
Mmm, delicious,
Jordan declares after a bite. Kristen rolls her eyes. You're just saying that to score points.
No, this really is good cake,
Trey says after he takes a forkful. Now you're just backing up your buddy, she says. Kristen, you are going to have to accept that you actually made a delicious cake in a tiny New York kitchen, I tell her after I finish another bite. Soon, she and Jordan have moved to the living room to pick out a movie on the laptop, while Trey and I wash off the plates. As I rinse the final one, he loops his arms around my waist, rests his chin on my shoulder, and sneaks in a kiss on my neck. Is that my birthday present? He tugs me against him, my back to his front.
I have many presents for you,
he says in a sexy, suggestive voice. I shut off the faucet and turn around in his arms. Being with you like this is all I want.
But I still want to give you more presents,
he says playfully. I brush my lips against his. I will gladly accept, but this is already the best birthday ever, I say, because it is, because I am living in the moment, in the present, making the most of it, taking every day one day at a time. Then we kiss, one of those sweet, lingering kisses that makes you feel as if you're floating. Come on, opening credits starting, Kristen says, calling out to us. We head to the living room and start the movie. All curled up on the couch like puppies in a litter, Kristen and Jordan tangled together, and Trey and I wrapped up in each other. But after a half hour, my stomach starts to churn again. Excuse me, I say, and head to the bathroom. As soon as I shut the door, I feel the cake rising back up, so I cover my mouth with my hand, then quickly realize that won't do the trick. I bend over the toilet and say goodbye to my birthday cake. I cough a few times, flush the toilet, then wash my hands. I reach for my toothbrush, squirt on some toothpaste, and brush my teeth to get rid of the yucky taste. I watch myself in the mirror, the repetitive motion lulling away the strange twists in my stomach. Then it hits me, like a big-ass wave you didn't see coming. It slams me to the shore, and I drop my toothbrush into the sink. As it clatters, a speckle of toothpaste ricochets into my eye. It stings momentarily, and I rub it away quickly. I kneel and open the cupboard below the sink, rummaging for something Kristen once needed several months ago. My heart is speeding and smashing against the walls of my chest. No way, no way, no way. But as I count backwards, I'm certain it's been more than 4 weeks, and I don't know how this could have happened. We were safe every time. But then condoms can break. Is it my fault, since I always put them on him? Did I slip and nick one with my fingernail? No, I'm just freaking out. I'm being ridiculous, like Kristen was when she bought this test. Hers was negative, as I predicted it would be. She flashed the stick before me, tearing up and down over one pink line. I reach for the other stick, the one she didn't need, since hers was negative. I read the instructions, and it's not morning, it's night, but hell if I care. I need to know. I need to settle my paranoid heart. I sit down on the toilet, pee on the stick, and wait all those interminable minutes for an answer. Trey told me nothing on the planet could come between us, but if anything could, this would be it, right? Nothing would scare him more than this. Nothing in the entire universe. I close my eyes, lean my head against the wall, and pray. When I open my eyes and hold up the stick, I am seasick. My future is out of focus, and even though my world has gone blurry, I can see clearly two pink lines. I have no idea how the father of the baby is going to take this news. To be continued.
This has been The Thrill of It, No Regrets, written by Lauren Blakely, narrated by Aaron Mallon at Brickshop Audio, Inc. Copyright 2013 by Lauren Blakely. Production copyright 2014 by Lauren Blakely.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.